All right, let's get rolling. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony's here. Jaguars Today starts right now.
Leftwich, who has not been functional today, stands in the shotgun. Takes the snap, drop to throw with time. Now fires it long down the field. He's looking for Jimmy Smith. Smith trying to get the ball. Makes the grab. He's got the ball. He's inside the 25. Over Troy Vincent. Is there drama in Byron Leftwich? He sure has shown it here in the final 2 minutes. Byron fighting the noise, calmly barks out the signals, takes the snap, drops, turns, throws. He's looking for Wilford. He made the grab. He made the grab. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Touchdown, Jaguars. Wilford made the grab. He made the grab. The Jaguars are going to win. There's no time left.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, welcome in everybody. Happy Thursday to you live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today, Jags Titans week. Well, remember last year, Dave, 0-8. Didn't matter. Went into Tennessee and left Delanie Walker more than sad. He was upset. He was frustrated. He was pissed off. He's crying a few tears last year, and let's hope we get a replay of that one coming up this Sunday. How do you feel? I mean, I think most people are saying this could be the week. Are we hoping too much? Is it more hope that it's the week, or do you really feel like this might be the week the Jags break through with a victory?
Well, going back to the intro, I was wondering if Byron was coming in studio today.
But hey, look, that's a way to debut, though, right?
Yeah.
Going down the field. Don't be jealous. You took his job. Come on, you took his job.
I was just wondering if he was coming in studio.
You thought we might have to switch right here? Yeah. I was gonna go all Jack Del Rio on you.
I was bracing myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, Byron Leftwich, who I think still believes he's probably the best quarterback in the National Football League. Anyway, that's another story. You got to have confidence in yourself when you're playing that game. What about the Titans week here, man? I mean, Jack certainly better last week, and we'll get to your impressions of their performance against Pittsburgh. But are we just hoping because we see another vulnerable team? Because I think Jeff has made the point all week listening to the drill. All kidding aside, Jeff Prosser does a tremendous job. And you say, look, in Nashville, they're saying, man, we need a win. Thank God the Jags are coming.
You know, I think this matchup is a good one. It's a good one for us, and it's also a good one for them. I think it's just going to be a really good game overall because for the Titans, their defense, not all that great. Offensively, they're struggling at the quarterback position. Locker's out, or he possibly could be out, and Charlie Whitehurst might be in. He's shown some flashes, but he's really just been a backup his whole career, and they call him Jesus Clipboard.
Clipboard Jesus,
you know.
It started with Adrian Peterson, who was Purple Jesus, okay? And apologies, I didn't make up these names, so if you're offended by these names, I'm just reporting, okay? Yeah. Purple Jesus was Adrian Peterson. I think for many reasons, that was probably a bad comparison, now particularly so. Then
absolutely.
Chris Johnson ran for 2,000 yards. They started calling him Light Blue Jesus, okay?
Gosh.
LBJ, Light Blue Jesus, and now you've got Clipboard Jesus in Nashville, another Nashville resident in Charlie Whitehurst. He is very proud of that hair.
Well, yeah, he should be.
Now you've got a history of
all
the Jesus
good on him.
Players in recent memory.
But I think this is definitely a week that we should get a win. We can get a win. We need a win. Because moving forward, I've heard it, you know, just on this station and other places that, you know, we have a few games where we might have a chance, but then after that, it toughens up. Yeah, and you don't want to miss the opportunities on those games that you actually have a chance to win. Pittsburgh, we felt like, you know, we wanted to be competitive. We thought we might have a chance, but this week we really do. And everybody can feel that we have this chance. But, you know, our team, they have to go out there. They have to compete. They have to man up and go into Tennessee and come back with a victory. I mean, it's we need this in the worst way. We definitely
You're
need it more
I get
than
it,
them, you know. And it'd be a great thing for Blake to be able to go get a victory, to feel good about his teammates, to feel good about himself, so that moving forward towards the end of the season, he can get on a little bit of a roll. The team can get on a little bit of a roll. all these young players. I've heard how many rookies were playing, and that's another thing. I don't know it's always a great thing when you can say, yeah, we're playing seven rookies across the board, da 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 da. Well, then you might want to go back and look at why are we having to play seven rookies? Why are there no veterans that are better to be able to go out there and play over these rookies to show them what it looks like, to give them a chance to be able to go out, you know, at the end of the year or next season and perform when we're throwing them in right away and throwing in so many of them? I mean,
well, you're right about that. And obviously they didn't plan for it to be this way, because you envision Cecil Shorts will have one of those wide receiver spots. So that's one of those rookies on the bench. But, you know, so you've got a couple of guys, and really if you start in three wides this week, if Marquise Lee is able to go, you got three rookie wide receivers who are going to be the top three guys you would expect on your depth chart. Now, I mean, maybe because Marquise Lee's missed a little bit of time and he hasn't, you know, really broken out yet, maybe Mike Brown would get the nod, but it's potentially three. They certainly didn't anticipate Luke Bianco starting at the center position. Mike Brewster was supposed to be their guy this year. That didn't work out. Jock McClendon didn't work out. So give credit to Bianco for playing above expectations. Linder, yes, you expected. You draft that guard in the third round. The hope, anyway, was that he'd be starting. Blake Bortles, you didn't know, but reasonable to think he'd be starting at some point in the season. And certainly, if Storm Johnson gets the start, that's not what you anticipated either, because you went out there and you paid Toby Gerhart in free agency. It's not the money. It's the, you know, that's the guy you, out of all the guys, they went early in free agency. I think the Giants got Rashad Jennings first. He might have been the first running back to sign, Tony.
I know he was among the first couple.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the timetable. And I understand with Rashad, a little bit older, okay? When he was here, he couldn't stay healthy when he had his opportunity. Yep. He had a great second half of the season last year, but I think he's 29 years old. So they went for a younger guy they felt might be able to hold up. And Rashad's injured again, but so Toby's been banged up as well. So, I mean, either way, I don't think it was totally by design, but you're right. There, you can make the argument.
So most of it is bad luck then.
Some of it's bad luck. Well, Brewster was a miscalculation. Although I know they tried to upgrade with Alex back, but once that fell through, that was the guy that got talked up all offseason. So that was a miss.
Yeah.
Cecil can't stay healthy right now. Gerhardt's combination of health, ineffectiveness.
Yeah.
You know, we keep harping on that one play over and over, but there's that shot you may have seen going around of, you know, a gaping hole, and it's just to his off his right shoulder, and he's running to his left when there's nothing there, and he's running straight into the back of the line.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know the
about.
One?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, even you can argue that because he had the horse collar type tackle that set him back, you know, hurt him right off the bat, that maybe that's going to impact his explosiveness, but shouldn't impact his vision, right?
No, exactly.
If you're picking the wrong hole.
I just have never seen it. I think, like I said
with
before,
Toby.
Yeah, I think he's a decent change-up guy, because you want to bring in some size, you want somebody to hit the hole, but he doesn't even hit the holes like you want him to. He caught that screen in the game this past weekend, and he was running right there with the line. You know, he wasn't even outrunning them. And I know you're trying to set the blocks up down the field and you know, use them to, but still, I mean, we should see a little bit more explosiveness. We should see a little bit more drive. We should see a little bit more, I don't know, passion, if you will. That's what I don't see. When Storm got in the game, it was like, oh, boom, boom, boom. Here we go. He's making cuts. He's making guys miss. He's running through arm tackles, you know, and I know that Toby is not that fast twitch kind of a guy, but we should see you running through some arm tackles. We should see a big hit where you, man, run a guy over, make his helmet come flying off. I mean, you're that big a guy, and we haven't. I'm sorry to get off the subject we were on before.
Look, the Jags are the subject, bro. Whatever direction you want to go with it is fine. It's understandable. And it's been brought up by several this week. We've discussed the idea that, look, what was he in Minnesota? He was your third down guy, right? And may, it, at the very least, if Storm could provide them a spark and he can stay healthy himself, because he's had that ankle's been balky as well, you know, and that's why we didn't see him in the first month of the season, that, you know, hey, worst comes to worst, you know Toby has excelled in that role. You know he can pass protect. You know he can catch the ball. So, look, nobody's writing him off. I think Jeff makes a good point as well. I always felt that Toby Gerhardt's going to get you when he gets 15 carries under his belt that day, because then you're going to start coming up and this guy who's a Mack truck is going to be bearing down on you. And in the second half, you're not going to be as keen to stick your nose in there with him. But they're not even carrying him 15 times as a team.
Yeah, we haven't even been in position to be able to keep giving him the ball, you know?
I mean, we go back to the day, 36 throws, and Tony keeps bringing up the point. People say the Jags are way too conservative with the play calling. Well, not in the run-pass ratio.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more than 3-to-1 pass to run last week in a one-possession game. So maybe you can critique the individual type of pass plays that they're doing. Are they taking enough shots downfield? Then you can get into why they may or may not be. Are receivers getting separation? We'll look back, as a matter of fact, on what you saw from the game this week with the Pittsburgh Steelers as we look ahead to the Tennessee Titans today. If you want to get on board, it's easy to do. 641-1010. Tweet me at MD_1010XL. Tweet David Garrard at David Garrard 9. Tony is at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course at 1010XL Lauren for the lovely and talented Lauren Brooks. In fact, we'll hear from Toby Gerhardt coming up a little bit later. Blake Bortles as well. Both of those guys meeting with the media in the locker room yesterday, so we'll get to that. Coming up, we'll take your calls and we'll try to figure out if, in fact, the Jags can break through and get to 1-5 this week. Doesn't sound like much. Just get to 1. Forget the 5. Just get to 1. It's all
That's
you
right.
can take care of this week. The 5 are in the past right now. All right, Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, yeah, it was an easy one. Smokey. Tracks of My Tears.
Is their favorite memory?
Well, I think this is pretty simple. Delaney Walker's favorite song. Remember in the game.
I want to see them cry again.
Ah, that's what it's got to be. Smokey Robinson, The Miracles, Tracks of My Tears. This is a good one, Dave. You want to sing? Feel free to sing, man, if you want to.
I would if I knew the words.
Oh, come on. You'll know when they
So take a good look at my heart. You know the words.
Take a good look at my heart?
Yeah, that's in the song.
Somewhere in there.
Take a good look at my face.
I think it's face.
All right, face, whatever.
Smile looks at a
tears, you know.
Look
close
a little
enough.
Bit closer.
You can
my
make up words if you want more over
that's
here.
All right. All right,
his heart's crying too.
Good start to the program today, ladies and gentlemen. Helmets and Heels weighing in on the broadcast today. By the way, never mind. Should I bring it up? Should I bring it up? Are you convinced there are people in the building that don't know your name and just call you Heels? Lauren, is that the case? What's the story here?
Jeff Prosser only calls me Heels now.
See, that's I wasn't going to name names, but I guess he would have known who I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone else wouldn't have, necessarily.
That's okay, though.
I'm sure he knows what your name is. He just want, you know, it's a friendly nickname. Like, I know Hacker's name is Ryan.
Right.
I just call him Hacker.
Well, and anytime...
Nobody knows what Beef's name is.
No, honestly, one time I got an email from Beef with his real name, and I was like, I don't know who that is telling
who
me
is
what to
person,
do.
Right? It was a Steve Butte character.
I really honestly had no idea how to send an email to somebody else saying, who is this person telling us we should be doing things differently? I was
right,
like,
today,
oh, that's Beef.
Yeah, that's just Beef. That's just Beef. What's he called the kid now? He didn't go with Brisket. He went with, what's the nickname for the little, it's not Tenderloin. Something like that. Sirloin tip. I don't know what it is. Something in that neighborhood. Fan feedback spotlight today. Brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Asking Jaguar fans what drives you every day. We ask you, what is your favorite memory from the Jaguar-Titans rivalry? A lot of bad ones, certainly. And many of those leap to mind. But share your favorite ones by tweeting us at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. And, of course, post on the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/Jaguars today. Jags defense played well, maybe for really the first time all year, Dave, when you consider the first time they held an opponent under 30 points. They held the Steelers to 10. They scored a defensive touchdown. So the Jags defense, I thought, did an outstanding job. You can talk stats all you want, right? And there are times when the score you allow is not indicative of how poorly you played. I didn't think that was the case this week. You know, sometimes maybe you hold a team to 14 points, but they fumbled it inside the 5 a couple times or threw a couple picks in the end zone, and you really got lucky, you know. I didn't think that was the case. I thought they did a tremendous job considering how hot Antonio Brown was coming in the game, how good a season Le'Veon Bell is having, the big game Heath Miller was coming off of. So did a good job. Is to you, watching the game, do you see signs of things that are sustainable there, or was this just one game on one Sunday afternoon?
No, I thought it was pretty good. I thought the secondary actually played pretty decent. What's the new guy's name?
Demetrius McCray.
McCray, yeah. There were times where, you know, Ben would move around and he would actually get the ball complete to Brown, but McCray was right there just about every time. And I remember the one time where Big Ben was trying to throw like a corner route over top of his head in between two guys, and it was complete, but it was out of bounds. I mean, that coverage was really good, and you could see Ben throughout the game, you know, doing his normal pumps and holding on to the ball and trying to move around and trying to run, trying to find guys. And there were times where he couldn't find anybody, and I thought, man, that is a great job. We got pressure on him. We got a sack fumble on him. I mean, there were a lot of great things in that game. There were just instances where we did have breakdowns, and it was usually around the linebacker area where there was guys down the seams, and you could see the linebackers not even being there because of the play action. So those are things that are going to have to continue to be worked, because teams are going to watch this film and see that they can continue to do that. But I thought definitely McCray came in and played outstanding.
And Grotz back at practice yesterday. McCray still ran with the ones.
The hot hand.
John Osier on Jaguars.com has a good story about Demetrius McCray up there right now if you want to learn a little bit more about him. Alan Ball calls him the Quiet Storm, which is confusing because there's a storm in the locker room now with Storm Johnson. So at least it's confusing to me. But, I agree with you. The secondary, the coverage was better. The linebacking core kind of is what it is right now. I don't think, outside of Posluszny, you don't have many guys who are very accomplished in the National Football League. You know, no offense to any of those guys. They're more accomplished than I'll ever be. But, you know, I mean, we're comparing them to their National Football League peers. There are certainly some issues there. But overall, 10 points allowed. You'll take that every single week in the National Football League and expect to win almost every time out, even allowing 17 total points you expect to win most weeks.
Yeah, and there was a point earlier in the week where everybody was just getting on Puz about him not being all that great and, you know, he was a liability. No, that's the last person. Like you said, I remember hearing you say this, there's more people that we need to start talking about here than Posluszny. I mean, he's the cornerstone of the defense, basically. He is the guy that you count on week in, week out to make tackles, to be there, to be on time, to get guys fired up. I mean, yes, there are linebackers that aren't the best in coverages.
But
they make up for it in so many other ways. I mean, he's not gonna be the linebacker that you just pick on nonstop, because he's gonna eventually make a play, knock the ball out, that kind of thing. But you're gonna be able to exploit him every once in a while. Now the other linebackers, you're definitely gonna pick on more because they don't have that credibility. They don't have that ability to get the guy down. And even when the ball is complete around Puz, he's there to make the tackle. You know, you might complete the ball, but he's not gonna let the guy slip out and, you know, get 40 yards out of it.
You know, Logman said, looking at the tape on the four sacks, he graded three of them to be coverage sacks, which is, again, going to the secondary. So sacks can be a deceiving statistic, certainly. The Jags have 16 sacks, which is great based on recent history through five games, just one behind the league leader. So they're in third place overall, only a couple teams, the Jets and maybe Buffalo, I think, ahead of them in that category. But it wasn't constant pressure.
No, it wasn't. I was going to say that,
right,
too.
Right, so, I mean, sometimes you get those sacks, but you'd almost rather have, you know, twice the pressure, half the sacks of what they got this week.
Yeah, we normally never hear of a coverage sack in Jacksonville. You never normally hear that. You normally see a guy beat a guy, and that's how he's getting his sack. But then there's too many times in the game where the quarterback is just sitting back there. I mean, you're like, where is the pressure? It's almost like the guys have glue on them and they're stuck to the offensive lineman. They can't get away. They can't even knife through. They can't, you know, get skinny and get by at any point in time. You know, in a 3-4 second clock when the quarterback is standing back in the pocket. So I would definitely rather see just constant pressure. even if you just got one sack that game, but you had constant pressure.
Affect him.
Yes, make him move. Get him off his mark. But when a quarterback is standing back there and you can see the actual you of the pocket and it looks perfect, that like that's what you coach, you know, it's tough. It's tough to have that coverage sack because our secondary is young and the guys aren't always playing up to their ability. But when you can combine both of them, that's when your defense is really effective.
Can you ever recall personally having the opportunity to have four pump fakes before throwing the football?
You know
that
what?
One play just really was like, wow. I don't think I'd ever seen that before.
I remember probably half a dozen times where I actually dropped in a pocket, looked at a couple different guys, threw the ball, and nobody was still around me. And so that's sad that over my career, I can only remember half a dozen
times. Those stand out.
Yeah, a handful of times where I looked around, I was like, oh man, you know what? Nobody actually touched me. Nobody was even close in that play. There was just so many times where you would have to move, you would have to slide, you would get the ball off, still get hit, or you're getting hit as you're throwing the ball. That to me was just normal.
Is that normal? Is that NFL normal, or was that just you felt like your team, your circumstance at that time? Do most quarterbacks feel, you think, the way you just described it?
I would say there's quarterbacks that actually get to throw the ball without getting hit.
What kind of line they've
got. Yeah, I mean, you don't go through every game that way. There are definitely some games where you see Kansas City getting on Tom Brady where they're just pounding them, you know. But you haven't seen
Brady
that.
In the playoffs in 2007.
Yeah.
There's one. I know what you're saying. There are instances when you feel like it's just pitch and catch.
Yeah, I've never had a game where I just felt like, I have had a game where I felt like I didn't get that dirty. I didn't hit the ground too many times, but I still hit the ground. I still, you know, took some shots. But normally for most teams, you're going to have to move around. You're going to get hit. You're going to try to limit the sacks, but you're going to get jostled a little bit in the pocket there. But there are just unique few, especially when Tom had his core of like five Pro Bowl linemen, you know, where he would never get touched. He would just stand back there and stop his feet. That was always a weird thing to me, that you could be in the pocket and just stand
flat-footed.
Yeah. I mean, that would be so hard to do. I would just feel like I'd have to move my feet just because. But, you know, That's great for him.
Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Just overall impressions. I'll get into some specifics with you in a moment, but your overall impressions about how Blake Bortles played last week.
Yeah, I thought he played pretty good. You know, he had his rookie situations, and it's not even just rookie moments, you know, when he throws the pick six. It's not even rookie moments. It's just him still learning. It's him still going through the process, and I think the more reps he has, when he sees those situations starting to creep up, he's able to maybe throw the ball over the receiver's head out of bounds, throw it into the dirt, maybe pump it like Big Ben does, because he knows it doesn't look good. He knows it's not like it should be. I think now he still doesn't have – you don't want him to have fear playing, but it's a healthy fear, because it doesn't look right. I shouldn't try to still jam it into this situation. I'm possibly putting my team in a vulnerable situation here by trying to jam this ball in. And those are the things that he learns. He learns that doesn't look good. Click it off. Come to the next guy, or possibly the third guy. And I think a lot of times where he's going to get is the defense is going to take him to the open guy. He already does a really good job of using his eyes, of going through reads. Heard Tony talking about this earlier in the week. He does a good job of going through his reads. He's going to do an even better job where he doesn't even have to worry about some of the guys that are in his read. He's actually going to know what the defense is giving him to take him to the open guy so that he can get there even faster.
You know why he's able to quote all this stuff, Tony? He's a long-time listener.
That's right.
Long-time.
Long-time listener.
I've never called in, but long-time listener.
Hey, you, I got to ask you about this. I wanted to bring this up with you all week. So now that you're here, immediately after the game, about the pick six, Blake said, that's on me. He goes, that was one play. I checked to the pass. And, A, that was my first mistake. And, B, that was just the, once I checked that, I compounded that by not just throwing that ball away. Just shouldn't have thrown that pass. So a couple of mistakes on the play. He does a really, for a young guy, does a great job of very matter-of-factly saying, hey, these are the areas I need to improve.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a show. I think it's, you know, he this is where I need to work. Tell us about checking out of plays and what kind of options you had in your career. Because I remember there's that story at one point, and you're like, I'm not allowed to audible, something to this effect. Don't mean put words in your mouth, but I remember it being a story, and we're all like, what is going on here? Dave's been playing for a while now. How much freedom did you have right from the beginning and all throughout your career in terms of changing the initial play call?
I will definitely get to that. I want to go back to what you were saying right with about Blake. That is a great learning experience for him, because there are times in a game where you want to check to that that run, that pass play that's a part of the run play, but you're in a situation where it's not the best thing. I might have a chance, but if I know if I turn around and hand the ball off and he gets up and gets 3 or 4 yards and maybe we have to punt, that might be the best thing for the team at this situation. And that's something he's going to learn, because he wants to make a play. He wants, sometimes quarterbacks get into the situation where we want the next play to be the game winning throw that wins the game for us, where we still got, you know, a whole quarter left. And if we just punt the ball right here, we might get it back and be able to go down the next drive. And you have to always think that it might not be this play. It may be the next play. And that's where he learned in that situation, that he was trying to take a chance. He was trying to make something happen, but he was trying to do probably a little bit more than he should have.
Sometimes live to fight another series.
Absolutely.
Is the best way. All right, now hold that thought on your ability to audible, because it's been a topic that's been discussed over the years, and certainly it's pertinent now with what Blake is going through as a young quarterback learning on the job. And David Garrard will tell you exactly what kind of freedom he had to check in and out of plays throughout his career. That's coming up. Jaguars Today, if you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and the quarterback, David Garrard, here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today rolling off blood, sweat, and tears. Go down gambling. You hearing us, Delaney? Get yourself some leftover terrible towels.
That's right.
Those tears away.
Delaney's turned himself into quite the player since he got over there in Nashville.
I'll give him credit.
I'm watching the tape of the Cleveland-Tennessee game right now, and on the first offensive play of the game, he basically just carries Dante Whitner down the field, just carries him down the field off the line of scrimmage, throws him off, and goes out for a 21-yard gain.
Nice.
I mean, he's a really, really physical guy.
Yeah, and we said this yesterday, Dave, or at some point this week. Yes, they blew a 28-3 lead. Biggest lead at home that's ever been blown in the NFL, but their offense was good enough to build a 28-3 lead as well. Even with Charlie Whitehurst, Whitehurst came in, he threw a couple touchdowns. So it really didn't fall off when Locker went out. They hit the big play to Justin Hunter, who's definitely dangerous, although extremely inconsistent. And Kendall Wright had his best game of the season as well. Walker's been good all year. Bishop Sankey, he had a couple of decent weeks, thought he was building up a little bit. His time is coming, but it's not there yet for their running game either. All right, let's get to it. We've teased people long enough about this. Your freedom at the line of scrimmage and how it evolved over the years, in your words.
Yeah, when I was a rookie with Coughlin, coming in with Mark being here, he knew the system really good. So they expected me to come in and do the same. And we would get to the line. If you didn't like what you saw, you could change to pretty much whatever play.
Anything.
As long as it fit the personnel that was in the game.
Okay.
So it had to work. You couldn't just come up with a power running play with 10 personnel in the game. That means you have just one running back. And
no tight end.
Yeah,
right,
no tight end, right. No fullback or anybody. So but that was with Coughlin. Once Coughlin left, every coordinator that came in after that did not give you that kind of freedom. And that was with Byron being out there. You know, that wasn't always just me.
But for you, even as a rookie now, you weren't the star. Would you, had you, had, had Mark missed half the year and you had to play, do you feel like Coughlin would have still, did you have it down enough that he would have trusted you to that extent?
I think he would have dialed things back. I think he would have still stuck with,
but that was his overall philosophy.
Yeah, his over, but he probably still on third down would have given me an option of, say a couple plays. Maybe I couldn't choose from 20 different plays, but maybe there were, you know, a handful of plays that I could choose from in this particular situation, whether it was third and long, third and medium, third and extra long, those kind of situations. But I would tell you that the coordinators from there on, even if it was run pass, run, pass, whatever it was, you come into the huddle with two different plays, you still had pass plays where if you got a certain look, now you could change up the combination of the route. So let's say you're getting two guys bump and run on your receivers. You could go to a particular route combination that would allow them to rub to get open. Say the guys are off. You could have another combination that way.
Was that a hand signal? How would you?
It was more hand signals, yes. So you would have hand, and that's what most guys are doing. They're hand signaling to get a favorable matchup with their receivers. You're not always changing the whole play. Most of the times you're not changing the whole play because that means you got to change what the offensive line is doing. You got to get the other side, even though you just want to get these two guys to run this particular route combination so that you know that's a win for your team as long as they do a good job with it. But that's pretty much how most teams are. Now you got, Peyton Manning, those guys where they go to the line basically with a handful of plays and they're barking out their cadence to see the defense move so that they can say, okay, this is what they're going to. This is what we saw during the week. We know what they're trying to get to defensively. So this is the play I want to run for that situation. We had that a little bit. We had it where we would be in certain down and distances and we could go to a dummy cadence to say, hey, we have these three or four plays here. Whatever defense you see as far as it being single high, too high, if it's man, then we want you to get to this play. So, but we weren't at the line and we were running a play and I all of a sudden didn't like it. And I would just say, all right, check, check, check. We're going to go to this play here. Everybody line up this way. We didn't really do that. It was normally game planned. This is the look we want to run this particular play in, so get to that play. It wasn't, you know, figure out which one you like and get to that one.
In your experience, you know, being around a couple of other teams later in your career, is that pretty standard? I mean, the way that's done then.
I will say the Dolphins were a little bit different. The Dolphins were running kind of the college style where everybody just always lined up. You know, the receivers always went back to the same spot. They looked to the sideline. And they got the play from the sideline. I got the play from my inside my headset, and I would tell my offensive line what the protection was or what the run was, what the snap count was on, and then we would roll. They were trying to be that hurry, fast pace, get it off quick. But with them, since we were set so early, I mean, it'd be like 25 seconds on the clock. If I saw what the defense in a situation, I could go to whatever play I want to. So they did give you that freedom, but that was because we were hurry up the whole time. We were already at the line of scrimmage. I had plenty of time to convey to everybody what the new play was, get the signals to my receivers. And those were a little bit of game plan situations too. But if I saw something that I thought maybe this particular play would work, I could get to it. I could call it really because we had so much time at the line of scrimmage. We didn't feel like we were going to be late. We didn't feel like we were going to have a lot of delayed games, those kind of things.
I wonder, you know, because you hear like Jim Kelly just called every play, right?
Yeah.
That's what they say. And you go back and just in my mind, I've got the thought, at least, that guys like Roger Staubach did the same. Like, they called the game themselves. I just wonder if that's the case, if it was because now things are so much more sophisticated.
I was going to say, if you go back
so
too far,
layers, right?
The game was so much more simple. You didn't have all the different route combinations. First of all, you didn't have all the different defenses that we have now. You know, they were just cover three, cover two, man coverage. fire zone, you know, where the defensive line drops out into coverage and you blitz from the other side, that just started when I got to college. You know, I remember them installing it, saying, there's this new defense that's out now, and we've got to start working on it. And I thought, you got defensive linemen dropping into coverage? Oh, my gosh, we're going to kill that, you know? So, but, and it just keeps evolving. But definitely things have gotten, I would say, things are a little bit more intense now as far as what you've got to learn. There's so many more different defenses, so much more offense. But the hurry-up teams, those are the teams that are able to call things at the line of scrimmage because they have so much time at the line.
You remember when that became the story here at Jacksonville, don't you? I mean, when you said something to the effect of, you know, I can't audible. And by that, again, tell us what you meant, but were you just saying, I can't just call anything I want?
I think what I was probably trying to say then was, I can't just, you know, go through the playbook and think of,
pick one out.
What play do I like right here? That we always game planned throughout the week. We always game plan for this look. Maybe it's this play. If we go to the line with two different plays, that's where we're running. Because it's tough sometimes when you're not in hurry up and you're breaking the huddle with 16 seconds on the clock to get to the line, to figure out with them trying to disguise what they're doing within the 16 seconds, and then get it across to the offensive line and to the receivers and have everybody on the same page. That's the toughest thing with audibling just from any play in the playbook. Now, if you have a pretty simple audible system, then you can do it. But like I said, things are so coaches can make things so difficult nowadays with the length of the play, the verbiage in the play, that you don't have the ability to convey the entire playbook and just pull something out to the guys. It can get tough.
When you play division opponents twice a year and you are standing on the sideline, right, and let's say you're on the road, so it's a quieter environment, and you're getting to hear all that stuff, do you say, I know what's coming here? Because, does the verbiage stay similar enough when the coaching staff and quarterback – are there year after year after year, or how much disguising? Because we always talk about that. You hear people say, oh, they had our signals. And then you're like, well, why didn't you switch up your signals? Why didn't you do something different? How much of all that goes on?
You do have to switch up your signals. You can't switch them up too much because guys, like I said,
confuse your own
guys,
right?
And especially if you bring new guys in. They just learned something last week. Now it's different this week, where your original guys have the ability to learn, have the ability to adjust. When you're starting to switch, you make guys play a whole lot slower because they're thinking, well, what was that signal now? I mean, I remember we just went up. And so when it's not ingrained in them, it can be tough. It can be tough. And you would want guys that can just learn on the fly. Hey, guys, we're switching that signal to this now, and, you know, let's just move forward with it. It can get tough because you'll see, if you're playing the quarterback spot, you'll signal a route to a guy, and they look at you with that kind of stare like, I don't know what you just gave me right now, but I'm going to try to figure it out.
I'm going to run and then, turn around, and if the ball comes to me, I'm going to catch it if I can
tell you how many times I had to kind of go halfway to him and kind of – not shout it to them, but, you know, word it to them, because I could tell they did not.
Down and out. Seven step down. All right.
and so that is the situation you get into when you're trying to be so creative, or trying to disguise and trying to not let the defense figure out what you're doing. You almost because you don't want to give the defense too much credit. You know, you might think they know what they're doing. They might think they have a bead on you, but they really don't. I mean, they can figure some things out if you've gone to it all year long, and they know that, hey, look what he's doing, that same signal. Just like when we do with them, we're looking at their signals on defense. Some of their signals get them to certain coverages, and so we know it, but they'll say that week that our signal that we were doing before is now this defense. And so when you think, oh, I know what they're doing now, they switched it up that week, and
right,
so
that would be the time. Do they ever switch? Is there ever, like, when it comes to a critical drive in the game, do you ever go out there and say, hey, we're going to show them a signal, and it's not going to mean this this time because they think they've got it all game long. That would,
yeah.
To me, I mean, it may be
you
seem
can.
Overly complicated,
you can.
But it would seem like very
you
effective
can.
Way to
you
do
can,
it.
But you can't, it can't be for everybody on the offense. It can't be something that would affect four different guys. You have to be able to say to somebody like Jimmy,
okay,
to even somebody like Matt, because he would like to try to play those kind of games with the guys. Those are the kind of things that he will remember. He's like, Dave, man, he's jumping on this route because when he's seen this signal. So this time, let's do this with this signal, and I'm going to do the complete opposite. He would be able to get that, but it has to be like with one guy. You can't try to like have the whole offense know that. Because then if you're trying to go to other guys and they're all not on the same page, now you're screwed.
Well, you just blew everyone's mind because no one thought Matt Jones ever put that much overthought into playing the game of football while he was
only
here.
When he was trying to trick people.
All right. Whatever. He's David Garrard. Now, that should put the rest. I mean, that's been a thing in the back of people's minds for years. They didn't trust Dave with the playbook. You know, and it's more an organizational philosophy on the way things are done. Like you say, Coughlin, from the jump, you're his quarterback. That's the way he was going to give you a lot of freedom and a lot of trust, and you had to, I'm sure, earn that, but very interesting.
And that's why I say it was Byron was here too. They didn't give him the whole playbook. You know, it wasn't just me.
It was the same deal for every while you played here under those.
Even in New York, it was the same with those guys there too.
Up and down the line. All right, he is David Garrard. I'm Mike Dempsey, along with Fat Tony and Lauren Brooks. Jaguars today continues on this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and plenty more coming up. Jaguars today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. 1938, it was October the 9th when the Cleveland Browns and the Chicago Bears played an NFL game without what, Tony? What did not occur during this game?
First down.
Dave.
I'm going to say the commentators did not speak.
That's good. So they remember that? That was like in the 80s when they tried that. There was a game that was broadcast.
Yeah,
and they just let the game 80s, play.
And they put stats and little whatever graphics they had at the time. The Cleveland Browns and Chicago Bears played a penalty-free game.
Oh, how about that?
How about that? Coaches were ecstatic with the performance of their charges on that given day. And then in 1989, Art Shell, the first black head coach in the modern era, led the Oakland Raiders to a 14-7 victory over the New York Jets in his debut at the helm of the Raiders. What, two stints as head coach of the Raiders, I think, for Art Shell, and a phenomenal player as well, a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. So there you have it, this date in football history, brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price. They can design a fence to fit your specifications. Absolutely phenomenal, the uniqueness and the creativity that they've got to work within the parameters that you're looking for, whether it's your home or your business. Call the Best Fence Company in Jacksonville. They'll give you a professional free estimate at your convenience, 268-1638, or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That has been this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Adrian Peterson's trial date has been set for December 1st, but his lawyer has been pushing for an expedited trial, so if anything were to come off of the docket of Judge Kelly Case's docket, then it is possible for Peterson to see his trial begin in November. Peterson was in court yesterday, but didn't enter a plea as the date for his case was set. There's a chance that the top two receivers taken in your fantasy draft were Calvin Johnson and A.J. Green. Both of those players are dealing with injuries that could threaten their playing time in the near future. Calvin Johnson has been diagnosed with that dreaded high ankle sprain, and his head coach Jim Caldwell said that he will strongly consider sitting Megatron this Sunday against Minnesota. Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green left the practice field on a cart after apparently re-injuring his right big toe. There isn't any word from the Bengals yet on Green's availability Sunday, but it is certainly something worth keeping your eye on for all those fantasy owners out there.
And speaking of which, a web.com fantasy forecast coming up in 3 hours right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Josh Carney will join me. Tony will have the fantasy forecast focus, and we'll certainly talk a lot about A.J. Green and Calvin Johnson today. By the way, the prosecutor in the Adrian Peterson case wants the judge removed, thinks that the judge doesn't adhere to the law enough, which is an issue, I guess, if you're a judge. And
seems
also
be their only job.
I guess the judge referred to both the prosecutor and Rusty Harden as, quote, media whores.
Yes.
And then he said, I was only joking. whatever. Rusty Harden
classic
said,
Judge Zinger.
Right, Rusty Harden trying to get on the judge's good side said, that's not the worst thing I've been called. And he, of course, was the lawyer for Roger Clemens, who got him off in his steroid case in front of, that was in front of Congress, right?
Yep.
I guess he went in front of, it was because he had testified in front of Congress and they tried to get him on perjury.
That is correct.
I believe is how that whole thing went. All right, here we go. Let's get some phone calls in. How about that at 641-1010? And let's get Jerome to lead us off with David Garrard, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Hi, Jerome. How are you?
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
I got two questions. With all the hamstring problems with the wide receiver core, and that's like saying, do you ever think, like, later on this year, how long do they last? Like, are they going to be consistent hamstring problems throughout the year? Where, because right now I see that's where the chemistry is, where he hasn't every week. It's like, you know, there's two different receivers starting, two different ones. It's like every week it's somebody else.
Gotcha. All right, what's your other question?
And David, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right, what's your third question?
Have you ever played on a team, without saying any names now, have you ever, like, teamship you played with, have you ever been like, wow, like, I can't believe I don't know what they see in him, or, you know what I mean, what the owners or whatever, the coaching staff really sees in, like, you know you better or whatever, you know you better than this guy, but, you know what I mean?
All right, thank you, Jerome. What about, you ever look across the locker room and say, wow, that guy not cut out for this?
Oh, yeah, because you have so many guys in the locker room, and, you know, you see a guy go out there and play every day, and then the thing that coaches don't see a lot of times is how a guy is in the locker room, in the cafeteria, stuff that he's talking about, all those kind of things, too, that also play into it. You're like, man, you know, you've got some issues. And then when you're on the field, you can see the issues kind of manifestate, you know, and so you definitely can see guys that shouldn't be in the locker room or need some more work, and maybe that's, you know, kind of a project for a coach, if you will, a guy that...
Even beyond, like, the personality, though, like, just in terms of sheer talent, you ever see, wow, they really missed on this guy? I mean, I don't see what they're seeing in this guy. I think that's maybe more what Jerome's talking
about.
Yeah,
well, there's been a few guys that you see during when they're in just shorts. They look great. You're like, man, this guy is going to be a real asset to this team. And then the pads get on, and he's a totally different guy. And you're like, okay, yeah, you're not going to be here very long.
The hamstring thing, they're all different. I mean, it depends on the severity. You look at Arian Foster, right? Arian Foster, oh,
yeah,
the hamstring injury didn't look like it last week, right? I mean, and so you can, if you recover, you recover, it's frustrating, I'm sure, for the player as much as anybody else. Cecil Shorts, Marquise Lee. And it does impact the chemistry, I would
say,
especially these young guys. I mean, Blake Bortles, everything's new. He's building from the ground up with all these guys in practice in these games. And it's been this way, with the exception of Allen Hurns, who's been the one guy who's been able to remain healthy throughout. It's been this way with all of them.
It's tough because with the hamstring, you have to let it rest. You have to let it heal. But when you're in the season, it's tough because you're trying to get them out as soon as possible, and sometimes a little bit quicker than they probably should. And that's why you see guys re-aggravate it. You know, if they would just give them the time to let them heal and maybe a little bit extra time, then they probably wouldn't be continuing to have these hamstring issues. But you're in the season. You need these guys. Everybody's already young at the receiver corps, so you're like, hurry up and heal. You know, you're a young guy. Don't milk it. Let's get out there and keep playing. And that's where the line is kind of blurred because, you know, I remember as a vet, I would tell guys, don't let them rush you back out there because they will. They'll rush you back out there as quick as they can. You know, if they gave you a 2 to 3 week kind of timeline, they're going to try to get you out there in a week and a half to almost 2 weeks. They may give you that too, but they're going to get you back out there and want you to go full speed and want you to produce. And as a young guy, you're going to feel that pressure and you're going to want to get back out there. You want to be back out there, but sometimes you have to think, okay, my health is more important than just me being on the field because, you know, the higher ups have kind of pressed me a little bit to get back on the field. And it's tough to be a young guy and say, you know, coach, it's just not quite ready yet, because you might look good, you know, going three quarters on the practice field. You're never really opening yourself up on the practice field. Everybody's monitoring you. But they see you make a few plays out of practice, and they're like, okay, he's ready. Let's get him out there. And in your mind, you might think, well, I did feel pretty good this week, but you never really opened it up, and you really don't know it until game day.
641-1010. Let's go back to the phones. Tommy, you're up next. How are you?
Doing great, guys. David, it's always a great time to hear you on the radio. I was just telling Lauren that just hearing the information from underneath the helmet and your experience, it's just invaluable for us as fans. And, you know, those of us who live in the glory days, in fact, I was watching ESPN and they had the greatest Hail Marys, and that pass you made just brought back some great memories. But one of the things I'm thinking about here, too, is the other thing, too. If you ever find out where that picture you guys had taken when you were playing Atlanta and there were the five African-American quarterbacks, I'd love to get that picture and put it on the wall, because that was a great picture with you, Quinn, and Byron, and Vic. And I can't remember. I think it was T with you guys had taken that picture after the – yeah, that picture.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a collector's item. I don't think there's ever been a game played where all the quarterbacks were African-American. And even though
Jack Harris should have been in that shot, yep, too, for that matter. And he put that group together, had a large hand in putting that group together. And that's pretty cool. I mean, that's, you know, what's cool to me is, look, now nobody says, well, Russell Wilson's a black quarterback who won the Super Bowl. Russell Wilson's a damn good quarterback who won the Super Bowl, right? Who cares?
Yep.
I mean, I'm not naive to say that nobody sees color in this country, but when it was you and Byron and Quinn Gray, until it got brought up, I don't know if anybody even, at least I don't even think anybody thought of it all that much.
We didn't even think about it.
Oh, it's a thing? Oh, that's a thing? Okay. I mean, that's a landmark, and it's nice, I'm sure, to be part of, you know, progress in that regard, but I would think the nice one, to me, my point of view, I can't speak for your experience, obviously, is just that, oh, okay. You know, it's just kind of like, it's not the first foremost thing in your mind.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool. You remember that game? Do you remember getting together with those guys?
I do remember.
Do you have that shot somewhere?
I'm going to have to go into the archives.
Your wife's the photographer.
She is.
All right, so she may be the one to ask about that. Thank you for the call, Tommy. Dave, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
David, got a quick question and then a quick comment, and I'll hang up and listen. My question is the communication inside your helmet. A lot of times I'd see you get a play from the sidelines and you'd have this look on your face like, coach, did you really just call this? Or maybe I didn't hear you, or, you know, so I'm just wondering about the accuracy of that headset in your helmet there. And my comment is, I've coached a lot of kids at the YMCA and the Flag Football League, David, and I just want to thank you, man, over the years, on and off the field. You're one hell of a role model for these kids, man, and you made a lot of great memories for them and myself, man. So thank you for all of that. And I wish you and your family the best in the future, man. Take care.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. The coach to quarterback is really accurate, honestly. There are times where it's going out a little bit, though. I think you remember in this past Monday night game with Washington, Kirk Cousins was having issues with it, and he was having run to the sideline like he was going back to high school, get the play, and then run all the way back to the huddle. So there are times where it does break down, but when it's on, it's on. And if you see a quarterback that's a little puzzled sometimes, maybe he got part of the play. But this is what coaches teach you. They say you need to learn what every play is going to be called, because when you get your plays, you get your play sheet, it's those plays. They don't just start manufacturing new plays. They don't try to figure out new ways throughout the game. Maybe at halftime you might come up with some new plays, but it's those plays. So learn what those plays say, because if I give you a part of the play, you should be able to finish.
Pick that out, right? How many plays are you going into a game with? Typical game.
Well, a call sheet could have anywhere 150 plays.
Are there some base plays on the 150 is there's all the base, variations?
Yeah, there's base plays, and then there's the variations of the formations off of it, the motions off of it. pretty much all the plays are the same plays. It's just how are you running it that week. That's the difference each week.
All right, good stuff, man. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Let's hear from Blake Bortles and Toby Gerhart coming up. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
That's something that you got to be smart with, and obviously it's stuff you learn from. You know, you can go back and watch the game and say, you know, maybe shouldn't have checked it and ran the ball, but if you check and complete it, nobody says anything. You got to be smart with it and take what they give you.
Blake Bortles talking about what we've been talking about, changing those play calls.
Yeah.
He's right. If it works, nobody says a word, do they? You've had that experience. You have that any coach. No. Yes. You know that whole experience?
That is called the be right play. You better be right.
if you're right, okay. You know what? Maybe don't change it next time, but good job right now. Appreciate that. All right, let's hear a little bit from Blake Bortles, and we'll get back. If you're on the line, we'll get to your calls coming up momentarily. Blake Bortles just talking about right now what his mindset is like as he goes into his third career start.
It's a process, and I think right now, I mean, obviously we're excited for Sunday. We're excited for the opportunity, but right now our sole focus and everything that we can control is on today, and how can we get ready and be prepared so that we can go have fun and enjoy Sunday.
All right, now hold on now. I appreciate Blake.
You know, process.
The whole thing. That was as canned an answer as you're going to get.
It's 100%.
It's process. We just got to, you know, lay the bricks, Dave.
You want to play good. You hope to play good.
Want to prepare, you know, take each game. And this game's the most important game because it's the next game, Dave. And
somebody was feeding him those things before he walked in there.
He has learned.
I remember those days.
Well, holy smokes. Come on. Give us something, Blake.
No doubt. We've heard for the last couple weeks now about Jed Fisch and Blake Bortles getting together before games to talk about the game plan going into them. And basically, Fisch has said that, yeah, they talk about it all week, and then Blake comes in on Fridays and says, this is what I'm comfortable with. And Jed will ask him, does anything need to be thrown out? Is there anything you're not comfortable with this week going into the game? And Blake was asked about having that kind of final say on the offensive game plan week to week.
There wasn't a whole lot taken out, you know, to begin with. There was some stuff, obviously. But, I mean, I think for the most part that we're on the same page, you know, for a lot of different things and, you know, feel the same about a lot of stuff and, you know, which is pretty neat because it's not, you know, a battle to get things in or to get things out. I mean, what he likes, you know, for the most part I like as well.
Pretty standard fare.
That is, and it's funny because as he gets older, there's going to be some funny things that will go on. Like, for example, you'll have a coordinator that puts in this play. He loves this play. He wants this play to be called in the game at some point, but all week long, it did not look good. And you get to that Friday or Saturday and you say, yeah, I want to pull this play out, coach. I don't like this play. He's like, well, you know, we're just going to save it. I'm telling you, if you just give it a chance, I'm like, coach, it didn't work all week. I know, but I just trust me on this. And then it actually ends up working in the game and you're like, great call, coach, you know, because sometimes during the week, they don't look good, but you know that when you get into the game, their defense runs. They run what they run, where you're trying to get your scout team to run their defense and have tendencies that their guys have. And it's hard sometimes because scout team guys are ingrained on the system that they are in here. And so they do a lot of those things. And you're like, that is not how he runs it on their team. We need you to do it like this. And they're like, but that doesn't make sense. And you're like, we don't care.
Right.
This is what they do.
They don't make sense.
Yes, exactly. So some of these plays, you have to just say, you know what? If coach likes it that much and it doesn't work, now you can just blame coach if it doesn't work.
Talked a lot this week about, you know, in terms of the pass plays, a lot of pass plays, pretty conservative pass plays, or at least not a lot of shots downfield. Whether that's by design, whether that's because guys aren't getting separation, Blake Bortles talked about just that concept of taking more shots down the field.
I think it's part of it. You know, it's part of going through and you've seen, you know, hundreds of looks, you know, as a quarterback. And, you know, you kind of get a feeling of when something, I mean, you know when you throw a ball if you shouldn't have thrown it or not. And you kind of start hoping as the ball's in the air that something good happens. But, you know, you've seen it and you've kind of, you know, taken the risk when necessary, I think.
Sure.
You know, it's a situation where I feel like it's this, going in against Pittsburgh. Everybody knows Dick LeBeau's defense just wreaks havoc on rookies. You can get in games sometimes where coaches are trying to be conservative for their quarterback. because they either don't want you to make a bad play down the field, or they know that their offensive line is not going to be able to hold up for you to be able to take these shots. And the really only quick shots you can take are take five steps, drop back, and throw a post, or throw a fade outside. Those are really the only quick take a shot play. Most shots, you have to play action, you have to stand in the pocket, five step, seven step drop, wait for guys to cross downfield, or wait for a guy to run a really good route deeper down the field, and that makes you vulnerable as a quarterback. It makes you have to sit back there, and makes the offensive line, it puts a lot of stress on them because they have to protect even longer, and we haven't really seen that. So coaches will say, you know what, we're going to get the ball out of your hands fast. We're going to do a little bit more quick game. We're going to throw the little bubble screens to the receivers. And we're going to take some shots. They'll give you some confidence. We're going to take some shots, but we're going to play smart too. And I think sometimes they play a little more conservative for themselves, trying to help the quarterback out as opposed to taking those shots.
Sure. And hopefully this week we see somebody catch the ball running through the secondary. I mean, that's something that we haven't seen a lot of yet with Blake Bortles in the game. And again, I think that's part of that conservative nature of where the ball's going right now. He completed a 22-yard pass, by the way, on Sunday. It just happened to get called back for holding. They're on the sideline to Allen Hurns on a 2nd and 20. He was also asked about that Titans defense, his first opportunity to take a look at it in his career this week.
They do a good job, you know, similar to obviously Pittsburgh, you know, with the connection there, and they're aggressive. They got some guys up front to get after it, and, you know, they got some guys in the secondary that are some veterans and have been around and seen some ball. It's good to have a little carryover, you know, obviously some similarities and some stuff that we've seen, but, you know, there will be new challenges and new wrinkles.
All right, there you go. Blake Bortles, a few of his thoughts yesterday. He is getting a little coachy speaky for me a little bit right now. See, by the way, we're hopeful. Don't want to jinx it. Blake in studio with us next Tuesday.
Cool.
Is the hope. Win or lose against the Titans. Make that win, preferably, certainly. And let's move on. Toby Gerhart, his ankle. Is it holding him back? He talked about this a little bit yesterday.
Came better. Was feeling good last week, and then unfortunately, second play or third play of the game kind of re-aggravated it, but, you know, feeling okay, going to work through it and try to get it better and get ready to go for Sunday.
Nobody's going to say, oh, man, it's really killing me. It's really slowing me down, and particularly on this kind of play. I mean, you guys, players just do not like to talk about injuries, understandably so, and almost all of them like to downplay, even if they are significant.
Well, because they're being told that by the coaches.
Right,
give them anything. Don't say anything where the opposition's gonna get a heads up on us, or kinda, you're just coached as don't talk about injuries, don't talk about injuries. And so they're gonna downplay it. They're gonna say, I feel pretty good, you know, it's just a little tweak here and there. That's why the whole tweak thing came out, you know, cause that gives you nothing.
that means you can feel
something there, but how much is really bothering you? And so he did a good job by what the coaches tell him.
That's right. You just sit at the locker the whole time the media's in there. When they leave, you get up and start limping around.
Yeah, exactly.
You can hardly move. One of those kind of days. Toby was also asked about his struggles thus far on the early season.
I was brought in here to help and make a difference, and so far I feel like I haven't done that. You know, it's from the injury early on, just not being able to get it right, and you know, now we're starting to get a little better and getting more cohesion, and it's still not feeling right. So, you know, we'll get it there, and, you know, the time will come when, you know, I really feel like I can make a difference.
All right, finally, for Toby Gerhart asked about whether or not he feels like things are slightly, at least, starting to come together.
We're definitely taking steps. I think it's shown each and every week. You know, I think it's gotten a little bit better, and, you know, unfortunately we didn't carry it as much as we'd like to last game. You know, I feel like it's getting there, and we're all on the same page, and, you know, refining our techniques and feeling how everybody's going to do it, and it's, you know, less MEs, whatever maybe, and it's starting to come together a lot better.
All right, there you go. Toby Gerhart, I mean, what can he say, right? It hadn't been good so far. Not going home.
Has it not been good? It's been terrible.
Yeah, it's been bad. So change it.
Yeah.
Right? Or somebody's coming by to hopefully get an opportunity to change it overall for the team. Maybe that's Storm Johnson this week. We'll find out. Let's go to the phones again, 641-1010. Jerry, you are next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Morning. How are y'all?
Good.
I got a question for David.
Yes, sir.
David, in your last year of college, I know you had two or three plays that you really liked and they worked. And then when you came to the Jaguars, did the coordinators, offensive coordinators, ask you if you had any plays that you really liked and actually put them in your playbook?
No. What they saw was throws that I could make, throws that I, because they watch our college film, so they knew the throws that I would, you know, complete down the field. And as we got into practice and I started running their plays, they got a feel for which plays I liked, and I would let them know the plays that I liked as well. So they wouldn't take my plays from college because a coach is, he's kind of set on his plays. He wants you to learn his plays.
You think?
Yeah.
I know, look, there's some ticker in the offseason, and the best coaches, I think, Dave, are ones who travel around, talk to other coaches, and say, hey, that's an interesting concept. How can I incorporate it? But I couldn't imagine too many pro coaches going, hey, college kid, you know?
Yeah.
What that
now,
college
now,
coach
have
you
Now, if you're on? The number one or number three pick overall, now you're going to ask a little bit more. Now you might bring in that coordinator or that quarterback coach to be a part of the system because, like Andrew Luck, his quarterback coach, I believe, is their coordinator or quarterback coach there in Indy. You want somebody that's going to be there, familiar with him, that knows how to talk to him, that knows how to work with him.
Right.
And if he had a lot of success, if he obviously had to, if you're number one pick overall or number three pick, that you may want to take some of those things and try to marry him into your system. Most offenses have similar plays, so it's not hard to say, here's a play that you ran a lot in college. We remember these plays. Here's the same kind of play that we have or similar to it. Let's make that your play here in the pros now. And as you get older in the pros, you want all the plays to be your play. You don't want to just have that one signature play, even though you do want to have that kind of honey hole, that go-to play that you can go to at times. But you just want to be able to be successful with all the plays because you never know which play is going to be the play that wins you the game. And you want to be able to run it and run it effectively.
All right, one more before we break. Mike, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I was wasting time at work yesterday, and I saw that the Jaguars are $33 million under the salary cap, and apparently that's, like, the most in the league. I was just wondering, when we're signing players like Ziggy Hood and Toby Gearhart, you know, how is that helping our team? I mean, we got a young quarterback. Shouldn't we be spending money to actually get good players? And that's it. Thanks, man.
All right. Well, I think, you know, not to put words in Dave Caldwell's mouth, I think it's pretty accepted that the philosophy is you've got all these young guys that you're trying to build a core through the draft. And with free agents, a lot of times, now not always, but a lot of times you're getting older players. And they did go out and get a couple of guys like Clemens and Red Bryant this year, but their shelf life, the clock's ticking on them. It's already been ticking on them. And by the time your young core rises up together, those guys may not be part of the picture anymore for you. So the hope is when this core starts to gel a little bit, maybe it's next off season, then you go out and then you start to really spend some of that cash in free agency. I'm not saying that's the perfect way to do it. I think that's the philosophy, though. I would have supplemented, you know, we bring up the example of Daryl Smith. I feel like we beat that one to death over and over again. Here's a guy who played extremely well for a number of years, very versatile guy, sat around in free agency. Dave could have had him for a song. And he goes out, hey, there's my phone. He goes out and, he plays very well and earns a new 4-year deal from the Baltimore Ravens. He sat around until like June or July in free agency. Could have had him for nothing, really.
I talked
to come
to
back. Yeah, was he surprised? There was no interest in, from the team to bring him back at that point?
He was. I mean, he was happy to kind of get a little of a break, a little bit of rest, but, you know, he was surprised to be sitting out there, you know, and, we were working out at the gym together, and but you know he knew that something would be coming around the mountain, if you will.
Eventually,
yeah. Right, yeah. And so he was just enjoying his family and just waiting for the moment. He would love to have been back, but it didn't work out that way.
Look, their idea has been for the last couple of years get low to not even really moderate price, low price guys. Hopefully you hit on a couple, give them a 1 or 2 year deal, young players that are coming off their first contract, a la a Cindric Marks, a la a Geno Hayes. Now it's worked out tremendously with Cindric Marks, and then you go and re-sign him. And so you look at him and say, well, instead of putting big money out there, you got a guy on a show me deal, and it worked out. He played very well. He earned the deal. He continues to play well. That's a free agent signing that was a hit. Other guys, you know, you're casting a wide blanket here. Dakota Watson has come in and made zero impact. You know, But that's been the philosophy. Take these guys that we see something in that may fit what we want to do, and they'll turn into something. I don't think anybody who covers this team, Tony, doesn't feel like it's time to open up the purse strings next offseason.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
they got the quarterback. It's time to go.
Yeah. Right. It's time to go. Now, they tried to do it with Alex Mack. They did it with Zane Beatles. They went out there and spent the money. Whether you feel like Beatles was worth the money or not, the way he's played so far, the idea was you're going to have a young left tackle who's hardly played, and they were looking at Mike Brewster in the center of the line at the time. Either way, you're going to have an inexperienced center. Then they went the Alex Mack route, didn't pan out. So they tried to go. They made a few forays, but I agree, $33 million under the cap. There's nothing wrong with not every player that you sign has to be part of the long-term picture, in my opinion. There's nothing wrong. Look, is Chris Clemons part of the long-term picture, or do they bring him in here to say, you know what, let's shore up this front line for the next year or two, and hopefully the defense will keep us in football games like they did this past week, and as the young offense grows, they'll keep us in enough games and we'll be able to steal some of those victories. But it's tough when you're 0-5, Dave, and you look at all that money under the cap. I understand that.
There is no way they can go into the offseason next year and have the same kind of repeat that they did this past offseason. There's just no way, because you've got, like you said, those young pieces, and they're going to have this whole season to play and to get better. If you're really trying to keep your jobs as the GM and the head coach, you've got to bring in some talent that is recognizable, that has gone out, been there, done that, can come in and fit this system and get rolling. Because, I mean, I think going into next year is going to be a real tell on whether this is the same group of people that's going to be in this building.
You look at Seattle, everyone said, you got to build through the draft. Sure, they built the core through the draft. Percy Harvin wasn't through the draft. Marshawn Lynch wasn't through the draft. Michael Bennett wasn't
and
through the draft.
And those are big
Avery
pieces.
Wasn't through the draft. There are a lot of you supplement, whether it's trades or free agency, and those were big pieces that they went out there, and, that's just the way it is. And just because Marshawn Lynch has been there for a while, he wasn't built through the draft.
No.
You can build through the draft by saying, hey, I'll take this draft pick and I'll go trade it for this guy who's already a good player, and I know he's a good player. You're building, period.
They are one of the youngest teams in
Seattle.
The league. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They're built to contend for a while. All right, we got to take a timeout. We will come back and take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. What good memories do you have from the Jags-Titans series? We'll talk about that next on Jaguars Today. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Delaney Walker getting ready to shed some more of those tears this weekend, baby. Love it. Every time this song plays, I call it the most iconic song of the 80s. That's to me. This is the quintessential 80s song. It's not for everybody, but it is for me. Back in my days, mopping the floors at Publix. Singing out loud. Sean Williams, if you're out there, we used to belt this out loud at 4 a.m. as we stock shelves at Publix in Deland, Florida. Oh, backstory there for you. Tears for fears. All right. We've got the fan feedback spotlight today. It's brought to you every day by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. And today we ask you, we know how bad the Titans have hurt your soul over the years. What good memory? What's the most positive memory you have as a Jaguar fan? And we got a few Titan fans tweeting at us too, but we'll ignore them. I was hoping that they would bring up last year's game. They didn't for some reason in Tennessee. What do we get today, Tony?
Here's what we got from Nick. Last year, Will Blackman strip sack touchdown. Hashtag beat the damn Titans. From Matt, we got best memories. Fisher always running his mouth. Makes me hate the Titans anymore. Even more. Hashtag air it out. Bortles. Hashtag D-stomp. From Eric, we got anytime we win against them is my favorite. A lot of bad memories with them, though. 99. Ugh. From Stevie, we got you got to go a long way to beat Delaney Walker's tears. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Dan, we got Fred Taylor breaking the 10,000-yard milestone in Nashville. Also won that game. I was actually up there for that game. From Punisher, we got last year's quadfecta strip sack fumble and the touchdown. The cherry on top was Delaney Walker crying. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Justin, we got Titans game. Bullock got hurt. Jeff Fisher came over to our goal. I screamed, "You suck, Jeff Fisher," starting a section chant of "You suck, Jeff Fisher." From Joey, we got sweeping them in 05. Wish they made the playoffs so we could have beat them again. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag never forget 99. Hashtag shut up, Randy. It's the first time we've had one of those in a
while. Yeah, it's been a while since we had Shut Up Randy, but it's, you know, one of the all-timers right there. Let me see. I had a couple of interesting hashtags on the Facebook page, and including, let's see, Josh Richburg, David Garrard crushes Vince Young of the Titans 37-7 in a Jaguar victory. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag bring back Garrard. Hashtag just kidding. Go Bortles. So,
love it.
And that's understandable. And Steve McGuigan said there can't be any favorites. They ruined everything right here in our stadium. They should be the Jags fans' number one hated opponent. They are mine. I think they are. It's the most, if you polled them all, we've done it more times than we care to count.
Yep.
On a slow off-season day.
And we talked to Fred Taylor about it last week, who the week before had talked about that Steeler game, and he always got up for the Steeler rivalry, obviously. And
sure.
We asked him point blank, you know, who do you hate more? Is it Steelers or Titans? And he was like, you know, it's not that you hate the Steelers. You get sick of their fans, and you get up for that game because it's Pittsburgh. But, man, I hate the Titans. I mean, he's like, I hate Tennessee.
Embodied by Jeff Titans. Fisher,
right.
I think. I mean, that exactly. Was, if it were some other coach, if it were Wade Phillips, you mentioned his name earlier, you know, who hates Wade Phillips, you know?
Yeah.
He's just there kind of guy. Do you have a favorite memory? Was it that 37-7 game or something else? Or
That was definitely one of them. I just, it's so hard for me to have any kind of good memories. There was, I had too many bad memories of them that it outweighs it so much. But I do remember that game right there when we walked out on the field and Pac-Man Jones said, all right, guys, let's just take it easy today. You know, we're out of it, so y'all don't throw at me too much. I don't want to go at it too much. But so I just started going at him the whole day because he was not into it.
He had checked out before he even started?
Yeah.
Were you like stunned or was he kind of kidding around or what?
He was kidding around, but you still don't kid around like that because that was in pregame warmups. And so I got into the locker room and I told all my receivers, I said, he is already checked out, so you get ready for this ball to come flying.
If he's covering you, it's coming your way.
And you could tell the team, you know, the whole team just seemed like they were checked out. They were not really tackling all that great, and we just kept pouring it on them. We said, all right, if you're not going to tackle us, we're just going to keep pushing it in the end zone. And then I even left about a little way in the third quarter or right in the fourth quarter somewhere in there, and Quinn Gray came out, and he came out and was still killing them. So that was definitely a good memory because there were so many bad ones that I had to pour it on them a little bit in that game to erase a little bit of those memories.
Old school memories. You've got still time to jump in at facebook.com/Jaguars today for the old school photo contest. Foundation Professionals of Florida giving you an opportunity to win tickets to next week's Cleveland game, a pair of tickets to that, and a pair of passes to the 1010XL pregame party as well, right outside gate one. So all you need to do, go to the Facebook page, Jaguars Today, post a photo. It's pinned at the top. The thread from Foundation Professionals of Florida, old school Jaguars is the theme. Whatever you feel is appropriate that fits that, we'll take a few of the best, put them in the drawing for a pair of those tickets. If you have issues with your home's foundation, call 287-2690, licensed and insured. Foundation Professionals of Florida online at foundationprosfl.com. All right, Dave, Sunday, Nashville, what do you see happening? What's going to happen here?
First of all, I just see a great game. I see Blake taking another step. I see this game him not having an interception. I see him able to get the ball in the end zone. A tight game. I see the Jags pulling this one out. I'm going to say that. I feel like they can go there and get a win. I think Blake is going to play pretty doggone good. He's going to continue to give the fans a lot of hope. And I see the other guys picking up their end of the bargain too. The run game. First and foremost, I see that getting better. I'm not going to say it's going to be great, but I see it getting better. And hopefully defense can build off what they did this past weekend.
Really can't see the run game backing up. So, you know what? All right. But, I mean, it hasn't been good.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get our first really good performance and not just a good relative to what we've seen so far kind of performance. Tennessee this week, Cleveland coming in, as we just mentioned. And, of course, Miami wraps up the first half of the schedule. And even within a season, things change. So it's dangerous to say such and such a team is going to be this because you don't know with injuries and what happens. I mean, look at Cincinnati right now. A.J. Green, who knows how long that toe is going to affect him. That's a huge part of what they want to do. But, you know, you look – November 2nd at Cincinnati, Dallas and London. Both of those teams have designs on the playoffs. The bye week, you go to Indianapolis. They already took care of you in your own place. Obviously, I think the division games, you always feel like you've got a chance.
Yeah.
You always get up for those. But the Giants playing good football now, coming in Houston, two games in the Final Four, and they're not that team that they were last year right now. And as you said tonight, you're picking them to beat Indy tonight, a couple of 3-2 teams at Baltimore, and you'll get the Titans again. So a lot of teams with playoff designs in that group in the second half of the season. Get the winning started this weekend. We'll see if they can get it done. Great job by you today, man.
Well, thank you. And for the Jags, don't worry about all what Dempsey just said right there. Just worry about the Titans.
Don't worry. We're allowed, the media's allowed to look at this.
This weekend.
Right. Don't worry about any of that. So I actually saw the stat earlier today. 75% of NFL teams, that's 24 of the 32, are within one game of their division lead right now. Yeah. Three out of four teams right now are within one game of their division lead, and two of them that aren't. Going at it on
going
Sunday.
It
Let's
on
go
Sunday.
Get
Who
one.
Who cares?
Let's go
guess
get
what?
One.
They're within one game of the Titans.
That's
okay?
right. Yes.
And if you beat them, you got the tiebreak, you're in third place. Okay,
there
you're
you
within
go.
A game of third place right now. Baby steps. By the way, no one in that locker room is ever worried about a damn word I've said. All right, so, and I don't expect that to change anytime, never mind anytime soon. All right, Dave, fantastic job today. Really appreciate
Thanks,
that. He is David Garrard with us every week. For Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. The boys of XL Primetime coming up next right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.